overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So this is the last in a series of talks for the new year. And the theme for this month is a new heaven and a new earth. And so in order to have a new earth, a new outpicturing, it's imperative that we find a new heaven within ourselves. Remembering that heaven is a state of consciousness. And as Dr. Ernest Holmes says, keep your conversations in heaven. So when we align ourselves to that spaciousness within ourselves, beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking that Rumi spoke about, he says there is a field. And he says that when the soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. Even the idea each other does not exist. I'll meet you there. And so when I invite you to meet in that heavenly consciousness, we're meeting in that field that's beyond thought. It's beyond you and me. And yet it's something we all share. And so this Sunday morning, I invite you to find that heavenly place within your heart. I like to refer to it as a beginner's heart and a beginner's mind. A beginner's heart is always fully present in the moment. And let's say a butterfly should appear on your pathway and the wing is torn on that butterfly. The beginner's heart would have compassion and would stop and perhaps would lift that butterfly up to a flower so that even though it can't fly anymore, it can drink from the nectar of the flower. A beginner's heart would do that. A beginner's mind would accept what is, whereas a conditioned mind would want to try to fix it or say what is wrong here, what needs to be done. But a beginner's mind would just say, yes, this is what life has brought to me. Can I be at peace with it without trying to change it? And when I don't try to change it, then I am free. I'm free of the idea that it should be other than what it is. And so we arrive here at these Sunday celebrations to align ourselves to this present moment, awake awareness, to that part of us that by its very nature is free. And as people come in, and people do, they're like distractions that life would bring to us. But if we don't react and we don't resist, then there is no reaction, but rather there is a response. And we give thanks for what is. So today we're speaking about grace, and I have been allowing grace to fill me with her ubiquitous nature. Grace is the ultimate, unmerited givingness of the universe to her creation, and we are that creation, and we are also the universe. And so when we know that every moment of every day is grace, sometimes that grace can be a fierce grace, something that is uncomfortable. Come on in. I see a young lady in the back that I haven't seen in a while. And I don't know who she is. And I love that when that happens, people show up with masks on. Now, some people are tall enough that I do recognize them. Even though their hair may change colors 100 times, I still can recognize that twinkle in their eye. So what if we knew that we are really the twinkle? Yes, we have 2 beautiful eyes. But what if what we are is that which is within that looks through those eyes? Then you're beginning to see life in a different way. In order for this grace to awaken within our hearts, it requires that we shift our perception. No longer the perceiver of me, who has a story, who has a future and who has a lot of baggage, shall I say, what if we could know ourselves as that which has no baggage, that has nothing that we are attached to? Who would we be then? And then we live in that question, not seeking somebody else to give you an answer, but by living in the question, we're 10 times more active in our cerebral cortex. So what would life look like if we could be kind? My beloved Charlotte Hemlock over there, she paints little rocks, and every now and then I'll walk around the center and there's a rock speaking to me. And I went over there by the collection basket. Oh, by the way, it's in the back of the room for those of you who want to know where it is. And there was this little rock sitting by the basket, and it had a little bird on the cover. And then when I turned the bird over, it just said, "Be kind." And so I decided I'm going to leave that little bird with his fanny sticking up and place it over there. So as we meander through there, it's like through grace, the universe, a woman who's got an obsession with painting rocks, one day wrote the words, "Be kind." And then I think of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Now, remind you, he is the head of the whole Buddhist thing. And he says, my religion isn't Theravada Buddhism. He says, my religion is kindness. So what if we could reduce this religiosity into a spirituality that doesn't need a container to define it, but that has, by its very nature, no container? How could God have a container? God is the invisible something that contains everything and yet is excluded by nothing. So then we don't have a Christian container or a Mormon container or a Jewish container. Yes, they all exist in the potpourri of the rocks of life, but they belong to the bigger something, and we belong to that bigger something. And maybe through grace, and sometimes a fierce grace, that something will awaken within us. And once it awakens, nothing else will satisfy us. In fact, it's as if we fall into that. It's not like we intentionally go there. We fall into it. And guess what? Just like this loving presence, it embraces us wherever we are. Has anybody ever been in a kind of a tight situation and you didn't know where you were going? And then when everything falls apart, like for me, it was a heart attack almost 3 years ago, and I found myself falling into the arms of grace, reminding me that, and it was in paradoxically, it was my little dog that I landed on. She had your hair color, Shannon. She was a natural redhead. And when I fell on the bed in her arms, I knew that I was in good hands, you know, and I managed to live. She didn't live, but I managed to live, but she still lives in my heart. So what if this life is a paradox and we get to navigate the best way we can and know that we will manifest everything we need on this journey, and it may not be what we want, but the soul will give it to us as this growth experience so we can evolve. And then we begin to see with new eyes that it was always that way. It was always something happened, we thought it was awful, but it was necessary for the soul to evolve. Then we create a new earth by creating the new heaven first and not the reverse. We don't want to change the outer first and then we'll change our belief systems. But when we become different, everything out there becomes different. And then you're living life from the inside out. So I invite you, if you're still with your eyes closed, to open them and to join us in this beautiful dance of awareness. Because that's what is dancing, is this awareness. Because of Adam coming to my house like a earthquake or a tornado, it's like all my repressed stuff has come to the surface to be met. And so gradually, one CD, one book, one cassette tape. Remember cassette tapes? I think I have a million of them in my... You see these things and you begin to explore them. And I found this talk while I was cleaning up the basement. I put the talk on and it was David Leonard in 2016. And he was speaking about Dance Me to the End of Love. And Dance Me to the End of Love was a song by Leonard Cohen. He's a Canadian musician. And I'm a dancer, so this is kind of a relevant song. And so if you Google up Dance Me to the End of Love, what you will see is The Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino, where he plays a blind lawyer. And at the end of The Scent of the Woman, in this wonderful, he won the Academy Award for that, he does a tango, and he's blind. And if a blind man can tango, well, anything is possible. So that had to have been through grace that he did this beautiful thing. And then you hear, of course, Leonard Cohen's beautiful song, Dance Me to the End of Love. And as I was listening to this cleaning up the basement, I reflected on, I think it was 30 years ago, when I was a brand new minister, I went to this big spiritual conference. And at the end of the week, they always had a big party, you know, with things hung from the ceiling and paper strands there, and they'd have a DJ up front. And being that I'm a dancer, everybody wants to dance with me. You know, can I have a dance with you, David? Can I have a dance with you? So this one minister, lady friend of mine, she says, I've seen you all night. You haven't had a dance. So I said, this next one will be our dance. Her name is Nikki. So Nikki and I go out to the middle of the dance floor. And what do you think they play? They play a tango. And she says, I don't know how to tango, do you? And I said, no, I don't know how to tango. And then I thought, well, through grace, maybe we can figure this out. It seems to me it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Then you do something. 1, 2, 3, 4. Then I'll do something. 3, 4, 5, 6. We do it together, and then we have the tango figured out. And so even though the Arthur Murray people that had it all figured out were dancing in circles around us, she and I held our own with our own grace-filled awareness that something in us does know how to do this, even though we say we can't and we don't. So could we open to that mysterious something that has always been there, assisting us in assuming the consciousness that's required for whatever it is that we need to do in this world? My friend Helen Street said, the only prayer you'll ever need, now don't you love it when there's only one prayer you'll ever need? This is the prayer that you need, the only one. You say to this infinite creative intelligence, assist me in assuming the consciousness that is required to do X, Y, or Z. Say to the universe, assist me to assume the consciousness to be a mother for 3 crazy triplets. Assist me in assuming the consciousness to be the mother for half the world. Assist me in assuming the consciousness to go into work, even though my boss has COVID-19. Assist me in assuming the consciousness to move to El Paso, Texas, even though I don't have a car to drive, but I'll get a plane ticket and my dad will drive the car. Assist me in assuming the consciousness to start a whole new marriage with a whole new husband who's coming back from Europe with a whole new baby in a whole new life that we're creating anew. Assist me in assuming the consciousness that's required. Then we stand in surprise of the grace that's right there assisting us. That's what grace does. It's the unmerited givingness. Unmerited means you don't have to earn it. You don't have to be a good boy or a good girl. You don't have to repent for your sins. This grace is given to the just and the unjust. It says in the Bible, the rain falls on the just and the unjust. It doesn't just fall on the just. It's for all of us. So what if the rain is a symbol of the givingness of life? So I have a million books on grace, and this morning at the center, I went into my library, and I taught this class years ago. It's called Falling into Grace by one of my teachers, Ajashanti, and I think it was one of his first books. And the whole premise is that all of life is grace. And in this book, he talks about when his life really fell apart, and that's when the grace was strongest. He says, when I didn't know what to do, when I was lost, when everything had fallen away, and I was in, you know, he cried out to God. That's when the grace was the strongest, not when everything's working right. So let me just give you a little taste of how he speaks about grace. He says, grace is something that comes to us when we somehow find ourselves completely available to it. And when we become open-hearted and open-minded, there's that beginner's heart and beginner's mind, open-hearted and open-minded, and are willing to entertain the possible that we may not know what we think we know. You know, that's the greatest thing about learning is first to unlearn. We've been fed a batch of lies from the very beginning. I was sharing at the revealing service, you know, being born a young gay man in the dark ages, you know, you were told by the church that you were an abomination in God's eyes. You know what that does to a little kid? You know, you hide, you're afraid to be seen. So what if all those lies had to be exposed by the light of truth so that I was no longer conditioned by the belief system? He says, we must have entertain a possibility that we may not know what we think we know. And in this gap of not knowing, in the suspension of any conclusion, then a whole other element of life and reality can rush into us. And he says, that's what I'm going to call grace. He said, it's the moment of aha. Aha. It's also the moment of ah, so. It's the moment of yes. I got it. You know, it's that moment when the light bulb goes on. I can see clearly now the pain has gone. I can see all the obstacles in my way. And I put them there. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. I wasn't seeing correctly. It's going to be a bright, 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 sunshiny day. So these songs even are pointing a way for us to see things differently. That's what's so imperative. If you get nothing else from coming here, it's learning to see with new eyes. There'll be a new earth when there's a new heaven in here. A new consciousness in here will create a new reality out there. It's not outside in, it's inside out. It's real simple stuff. Somehow the difficult situations in our lives have a way of opening our hearts and minds the most. So those difficult situations, you know, Trey and I have been together 45 years. The first year was our hardest year together because we were so young in our 20s, being with another person. I'm surprised we made it through that first year. But once we made it through the first year, then we began to grow up together. We began to go through. He had a nervous breakdown. I had one the year later. But we got through that because we were supporting each other in that journey. And that was all grace. You can say those were tough times. Those were grace-filled times when we had nothing but each other. We had no money. I was so happy being a blissful pauper on the planet. You know, it's when you have money that you have to worry about it. He says, at the very end, I'll give you the very, very end of the book. I'd like to go to the end. Start at the beginning, go to the end. You don't have to read the book. No. No, I've read the book many times. So here's the conclusion. He says, grace is all around us if we only have eyes to see it. I think I just said that, didn't I? The good moments are grace. The difficult moments are grace. The confusing moments, Raul knows what I'm talking about, are grace. And when we can begin to open enough to realize that there is grace in every single situation, in each person that we meet, no matter how easy or difficult we perceive them to be, then our hearts will flower and we'll be able to express the peace and the love that each of us has within us. Huh. If we open to the moment, whatever the moment might be, the difficult moment, the joy-filled moment. And then he says, we let go into this grace. We surrender into this grace. This grace is always there in every single moment. So the title of the book is We Fall Into the Grace. Not like we strategize our way into grace. Nah, we just open to it, you know. And then he says, it's something that we fall into. Like when we fall into the arms of another one, or we put our head on the pillow to go to sleep, and whatever might be there in our experience occurs within this vast spaciousness of grace, of peace, of stillness, of ultimate well-being. Well, so is it that simple, David? It's that simple. You mean it's already there? It's just waiting for us to turn our attention toward it? Yeah, it's right there. Just like Nikki's bed, anybody's welcome to jump in and find the grace of Mama there. She just announced it. If we let go for just a minute, if we can relax, if we can fall into the center of this now moment, we can encounter directly the freedom that we've all been seeking. It's always now. You know, last week someone was confused when I talked about the four gateways of freedom. And the four gateways of freedom basically says, you let go of identification with the story, which is the past. You also let go of the me person that is creating this separation from other. You let go of this idea to obsess on the future, because if you're always focused on the future, you're not in the present moment. And then the last gateway to freedom is you dive into present moment awareness, whatever it might be. Sitting with a mask on at the Center for Spiritual Living, walking through Publix grocery store, being in a disc golf contest tomorrow, yesterday, whatever it is, it requires present moment awareness. He said, it is right here, it is right now, it doesn't live in the future. It's not going to come when our life changes, when circumstances of our day-to-day reality become different. This freedom is something that is right in the midst of this present moment. That's why the breath is so powerful. Just stop, be here now. This is Terry made a beautiful little beautiful thing for the bookstore, and it sits out there. It says, be here now. That was Ram Dass's first book. His last book was called Be Love Now. So what if he's saying the same thing, to stop and let this love that we are unfold? When we begin to surrender our demand that life needs to change, that life needs to alter itself to suit my ideas, then everything opens up when we cease to want to change the outer. Doesn't mean that we don't change, because we live in this world of impermanence. So by its very nature, it changes. But when you become the instrument of change, then you're not seeking the change out here. You're finding the change within here. I was sharing with my beloved friend Jude that when I was in New York City, she reminded me how lonely I was. And I was lonely there for several years. I lived in isolation. I had a wall around me. I walked to work, walked home from work, stayed in my house. We didn't have COVID then, never went out. I stayed in there by myself, all alone. I just didn't trust love. I didn't trust relationships. And then somehow in that isolation, I found something in here. I found this little voice that was so loving and present. And I became intimate with him. And then I was able to go out and one person at a time, step back into the world and be prepared. So it was all grace, especially those painful times. He says, this is the heart of the spiritual awakening, to realize, this is the end of the book, to realize that what we have always yearned for is the very thing in our deepest source that we have always been. The thing you're looking for, you're looking with. It's you. It's not out there. So what if we could, in the simplicity of this, go home and then realize I've already arrived. I'm already there. And you know, if you can't find it there, you're never going to find it because you never lost it to begin with. That's what he's saying. So stop long enough to say, my God, I've arrived. I'm home. It's right there. It's right now. It's that simple. Freedom is always available. And you know, freedom is the whole name of the game. That's what this whole spiritual path is about. Moksha, freedom. What do we want to be free from? We want to be free from our sins. The acronym for sins are self-inflicted nonsense. We want to get free from this me that goes on and on and on about a bunch of nothing that we define with, and then we bury ourselves in that stuff. And when you get free from yourself, wow, then you're free in the self with the big S. It's like the wave has discovered the ocean, and the wave was incidental. But the ocean is eternal. That's the invitation. It's already here. Freedom is always available to us. And in those very moments, when we know that we don't know, like me with the tango, when we take the backward step with our heart wide open, he says, we just fall into grace. Last sentence of the book. We just fall into the grace. I don't know. I don't have a clue. But grace does. When you go back to El Paso, it's going to be one big grace-filled experience. And if you don't outline it, one of the traps in religious science, and Judy Graff knows this, when you do a spiritual mind treatment, they say not to outline. Outline is to get really specific with how you think that life should look. And if you outline your life, then you're caught up in this mindset, which becomes more of a prison than a liberation. So could we let go of this idea of how life is supposed to look, and then life will be what life will be. And then it's a constant surprise. And then you find yourself moving from Mississippi to Alabama. Why, that wasn't in the plan, was it? No, it wasn't in the plan. You know, I'll go back to social, be a social worker. Well, I'm a physicist here. I'm not going to be a social worker. Well, the plan changed, you know. I'm going to leave the Baptist church and go to that place. Then they said, you know, well, what happened there? I'm going to leave Germany, not on my own will, but I'm going to go and I'm going to find the love of my life. From the Dominican Republic. That wasn't in the plan. I was supposed to marry a count and stay in Germany and raise my kids. And now I'm sitting in this. So what if grace, through its wisdom, through its fierceness, will move us in the direction that our soul needs to go and not necessarily something that we wanted to? So this month, the five Sundays, we looked the first week at the flowering of human consciousness. And I love that idea of flowering. Everything flowers. This is Eckhart Tolle's word, the flowering of human consciousness. He says, even rocks flower, Charlotte. He says, take a thing of coal and subject that coal to heat and intense pressure. And what will that piece of coal flower into but a diamond? So what if each one of us gets to flower in our own unique way? You know, the flower is the most beautiful aspect of a plant. The flower is the reproductive organ of a plant. It's through the flower that the fruit is created. So when our soul flowers, when our consciousness flowers, well, then everything's going to shift in the way we are in relationships, the way we approach work. We're going to seek, in Khalil Gibran's the book, The Prophet, he says, your work should be your worship. So then when Nikki goes into the hospital to work, it's not like she's working to get a paycheck. It's her way of deep devotion and service. That's your work. So your job and your work are two different things. Yeah, my job is to be at Publix as the checker-outer, but my work is to smile at people behind my mask and send the rays of love to them. That's my work. My job is to check out the groceries. And you begin to see things with new eyes. So that's the flowering of human consciousness. Things aren't the way they appear to be. And then the second week, we explored Pema Chodron's latest book is called Welcoming the Unwelcome. And I thought this is certainly relevant during the time when we have COVID-19, when we have insurrections in the White House. And you got to be crazy, David. Welcome the unwelcome? The only way to get past that which is unwelcome is to welcome it in. My teacher, Gangaji, says there's only two things you ever need to know. Now, don't you love it when they get real simple? Because Adam's Mr. Simplicity over here. Two things you only need to know, according to Gangaji. If you run away from anything, you'll never get away from it. And if you run towards something, you'll never go there. You'll never get there. So instead of running away from what you don't want, stop long enough and let it catch up with you. There it is, you know? And could I be willing to meet it? Whatever it is. Huh. Then my fears will come up, and I've met that fear, and it no longer has control over me. Then my sadness will come up, or my loneliness, and I can actually feel the grief, and I don't have to repress it like I was so good at for years. So when sadness comes up, I can feel that, and maybe a tear or two will fall. And then there's a release, because I'm not bound by a repressed sense of sadness. If I want to chase after relationships, which I did when I was younger, I was a loser at relationships because it was always someday I'll or Mr. Right or Mr. Right Away instead of knowing that this was Mr. Right and this was Mr. Right Away. It was not there. So this is the gift in welcoming the unwelcome. So you might want to ask yourself in your life, his 40th birthday is coming up and I'm going to give him, I already have it for him, but I haven't given it to him yet. I'm making him a journal. A Zen journal, because something about a journal is when that stuff comes up from the subjective and you have a journal, you can vomit it out on the page. That's my phraseology. Sometimes it's so painful, you don't want to tell a friend about it, but you can put it down. You can write your pain. You can write your sadness. And then in a detached sort of way, you witness it and you got it out of you. So it's no longer festering within you. Now, journals are also beautiful when you hear the voice of God speaking to you. And all of a sudden, you're sitting in the middle of nature, and you're like Jack, you're seeing symbols. Now, you know, that's what the soul does. The soul speaks in the language of symbols. So instead of using the journal to write poetry down, which you may write, he might start drawing things. And you know, when I was a young man in my 20s, my journals were just filled with art, because my soul was showing me things in symbols. So what if that journal is an oracle, is an outlet for this divine presence? It was Emerson said, there is a stream whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes, I know not. But when it comes, and this is in his essay on the Oversoul, he says, I am a pensioner, I draw from that something. So what if this something needs us as an outlet for its creative expression? Terry knows what I'm talking about. And then when you're in this creative flow, you're not the doer. This creative something is creating through you, and oftentimes you're in awe and shock. My God, this came through me? Because we are truly our instruments for the divine. So what would life look like when you stopped running away from anything and you began to welcome it all? During this time, while there's so much going on the planet, and there is a lot of tension, in Pema Chodron's book, she has one word that spoke volumes. The word was Shempa. And Shempa is that which triggers us. And when my husband picked up the little book reading about Shempa, he says, oh my God, my whole life is Shempa. He said, I live in one big reaction. I said, I know, I could have told you that, but you had to read it for yourself to figure it out. And so when we know this Shempa is coming up, instead of pushing it away, okay, invite the Shempa in. Somebody's pushing my buttons. Could I open to that button pusher? Find out what this button's all about. Oh, they're trying to control me. I must have control issues. Or they're trying to preach to me about sin and hell and damnation. You know, when the evangelicals come and preach to me their gospel, you know, I've learned I can't win the battle, so I kind of just tiptoe away, and I've learned the phrase that Adam and I use, you may be right, but I have to go somewhere else. And in that way, I don't resist it. I set myself free. The third week, and this is one of my favorite subjects, and I hope to explore it more, is the original wisdom, the aboriginal wisdom of the native people. The aboriginal wisdom, the native people recognizes that we're all connected, that this is all our family. Could we evolve to where we used to be, where we don't see ourselves as separate? They would actually talk to the people from, I think Jack's one of the originals. They would talk to people from the Pleiades. They would also talk to the leaves and the trees and to the butterflies and to the rocks. It's all consciousness. So why would it not be able to communicate? The original people knew how to do that. Now we could go back to our original roots just by, through lowly listening. In our Wednesday night show, satsang, we do a lot of shamanic stuff because Glory G's got to study the shaman truth, and we beat the drum and shake the rattles. And there's something about going at what they call non-ordinary consciousness, when you step out of the logical mind and something begins to awaken, the imagination, if you will, the intuition, if you will. And could we, through lowly listening, discover what's being revealed within us? That's what all the great teachers have done. Jesus himself. Last week, we explored Adam's favorite subject, which is simplicity. The truth is simple. It's so simple, it's hard to even communicate. It doesn't get any simpler than Ta Tuam Asi, Sanskrit. Thou art that. Everything is that. It's all God. There's nothing here but God. The first words of the Bible, in the beginning, God. Pretty simple, isn't it? Throw the rest of the book away. And it says, and darkness was on the face of the earth. This is the darkness that we all live in. And God said, in the language that God speaks, which is silence, let there be light. And the word for light was Shekinah, which is the light within. So in the beginning, the face of God, you might say, is darkness. Darkness is on the face of the earth. And then this light begins to emerge. And what you are is light, and what I am is light. One of my teachers was Llewellyn Van Lee. He's a Sufi teacher. And he talks about the transmission of light from teacher to student. And he says it's the light within the teacher that sees the light within the student. And the job of the teacher is to fan that light within the student. And he says that's their only job, is to keep that light lit within the student. And in the Sufi tradition, they say, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. So the light within me meets the light within Michael. And it's the same light. There's not a David light and a Michael light. It's just the one light. And when we can experience ourselves in this invisible something called light and love, well, then the form is secondary. The consciousness is paramount. So could we know ourselves as light and love? You know, when I do a memorial service, when someone has died, the Sufis say, when you incarnate with love and light. And when you leave this mortal coil, when the body leaves, you take the light with you, but you leave the love behind. And, you know, I can certainly attest to that. There's so much love that has never died in my life. And when you've been as long on the planet as I have, and you've had anybody have a pet that died or a grandparent that died, and you feel them with you all the time. I feel my mother and father all the time. And so thank you. One of the things Adam did in excavating the earthquake in the basement, I found all these photographs of my mother and my father, a very young mom and a very young dad before they even got together. And so I put them in this frame, and I get to see them when I go into my little man cave, and it's as if she's smiling down at me from heaven and he's smiling at me. This is before they got lost in the confusion of a loveless marriage, when they were still this fresh, living energy. And so what if we could keep that love alive through our willingness to shift the way we see things? I wanted to give you a taste of Dr. Ernest Holmes. This is 365 days. This is one day for every day of the week, and it's like you know, you read his prayer for the day, and you read his prayer. I've taught this many, many years ago, but I wanted to pull out so you could hear how he works with grace in prayer, how you can actually align yourself to this givingness through this brilliant mind that he was. And he starts off by quoting scripture. This is filled with a lot of scripture. The scripture he quotes is, "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." Now, you must learn how to understand what the Bible is saying when he says, fear not. And, you know, all the angels of the Lord, when they would come, they would say, fear not. Well, that just shows you, we tend to move into the consciousness of fear. So, fear not. And then he says, it's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. The Father is the universe. And you've already been given the kingdom. And what is the kingdom? The kingdom, Jesus' message was just one thing, the kingdom. And the kingdom in Aramaic was Malkutha, which is the sovereign counsel of God within yourself. So you've already been given this guidance system within. It's already been given. That's grace. So if it's that simple, go to that sovereign council. Go within. Don't go to your mother and ask her for advice, even though it's wonderful to go to her. And you know what I learned this, Nikki, too, from another mother? To give unsolicited advice to your children is an act of violence. I know. So, but that's good to know, because we don't need to go around telling the world how it needs to be. You know, we need to assist them in discovering for themselves what would be the kindest thing, what would be the smartest thing for you, what would be the most loving thing. And when we discover that for ourselves, when little Liam discovers that, well, then he's consciously co-creating with the universe. And so this is Dr. Ernest Holmes. We should always keep in mind that we are beneficiaries of life with a capital L, that we are here to live the life that we've been given. Wow. So could we open to this life with a big L? Not this little life, but the big life that we're all sharing. So we're beneficiaries of the one life. He says, we do not put the chicken in the egg, nor do we put the oak tree in the acorn. Inherent within the acorn is the oak tree. Inherent with the egg is the chicken. And inherent within the God seed, which is you and me, is the God of our being. Try that one on for size, but don't think too much about it. Okay. So he says, rather, we take them out. We did not create this divine presence, nor this law of good. We commune with this presence. And we use these spiritual laws. And he says, therefore, when Jesus said, it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, then it's our business to receive it. It's all about receiving and then giving. We're on the receiving. Remember, there's a stream whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes I know not, but I'm a pensioner. I'm receiving it. So if we're receiving grace, grace is all around us. It's in the smile of Al Underbrink. It's in the hug of Michael Short. It's in the beautiful caring of Gigi. This is all grace. It's in the wisdom of Jack and in the deep love of his mother. That's all grace. And our job is to receive it. So he goes on to say, it is my Father's good pleasure. Oh, here's his affirmation. So I invite you to take this in your heart as Ernest Holmes giving you, like planting a seed in your, you're receiving it. This is his affirmation for receiving it. This is how he says. So affirm for yourself in your heart, it is my Father's good pleasure to give me this kingdom. So today I accept this kingdom, this divine guidance system. I accept it in its fullness. Because of it, this day contains joy and happiness and is filled with peace. Running through it all is the silent power of spiritual wisdom and love. Harmoniously and happily, it's governing my thoughts, it's governing my decisions and acceptances, so that everything I do is done with ease because I'm living in grace. I'm not the doer. It's doing me. And it's filled with wisdom and clarity and joy and happiness. I lay all my weariness aside and my loneliness aside. And I accept this life-giving, this invigorating, this dynamic activity of a living spirit within me, knowing that it vitalizes every organ in my body. Amen. It flows with power and strength and purpose through everything that I do. Let's hear an amen. Amen. And as it leads me gently down the pathways of life, I know that I am guided. Today is the day that God has made, and I am glad in it. And when evening comes, and the cool shadows of peace will fall across my pathway, and the quiet of night will enter into my soul, with the beatitude of the Spirit flowing through me as the river of life, I rest in an everlasting grace. That's his prayer, to just anchor yourselves in that which is always there, an everlasting grace, but it does require that we receive it. Huh. We've been given this gift called life, but we need to embrace it. Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind says things like this. He says, you can have as much good in this life as you can take. Well, that sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? He says, but you can only take what you embody. So if you want love in this life, you have to embody love. If you want peace, you have to find that peace that's already there, a peace that passes all understanding. It's not a peace that's going to happen when Trump stops yelling at Biden. No, the peace is already there amidst the yelling. And when we find that peace and we align with that peace, then we become an instrument of peace and we carry it into the world. Now that's what our job is. You know, St. Francis of Assisi, I love that he lived in paradox. And they'd say, well, why did God choose you to have his word made manifest as a saint? And he says, because God found no more lowly sinner than myself. So he recognized that in the darkness came the light. And he would say, let me not seek so much to be understood as to understand. Let me not seek so much to fight the darkness, but to bring the light. Let me not seek so much to fight about this human coil, but embraced to the everlasting life that was never born and never dies. So he was showing us through his example how to live this life in grace by knowing that it's all you and that it's all here for you. And I went through a lot of my books in the basement, thanks to Adam, and this is one that I've had for years and years, and I've taught it several times. It's called For the Love of God, and it's enlightened teachers from all different walks of life speaking. And I went to the very, very last one in the book. It's a man named Hugh Prather, who's probably the least spiritual and the least religious of them all. But he recognizes the necessity of the simplicity of this something that we all share, finding an outlet through us. And here was his way of discovering it. And I thought it was a very practical and a simple way. He says, to the extent that we slip into thinking that God or truth can be used, we become confused and disillusioned with life. We're not supposed to use this power for our greater good. It's not about using this thing. It's about knowing that we are this thing. And so, having said that, he said, this is the two-part principle that brings me back to grace. The first part is, we must take up our life as our life is today. We must commit to the bodies that we have, to the children that we have, to where we live and work, even the physical symptoms that we have in this instant. And it may be a mess, but we embrace it because it's our life right now. We're not trying to be in denial of the life that we've been given. The second principle, the second part is that no matter what the picture of our life is, we must turn to God in the middle of it. In every small encounter, in every detail of every circumstance, turn to God, he said. And we must keep doing this until each activity becomes a prayer. Everything becomes a prayer. Prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life, even if it's a crappy life, but with a jubilant to behold in heart, to find the grace in the tough times. So he goes on to talk about the second phase. We must keep doing it until everything becomes a prayer. Cleaning up the dog hair is a prayer. Squeezing the dog's anal sacs is a prayer. Adam does that too. Balancing the checkbook becomes a prayer. Waiting for someone who is late and knowing that you're really an impatient person, that is a prayer. Firing an employee, saying yes, saying no, whatever we find before us is nothing more than an opportunity to know the peace of God in everything we're experiencing. That's grace in action. So it's not a code of conduct. It does not look a certain way, but rather it feels a certain way. You know, if you would know God, you feel your way into that. It's not a mind thing. You feel your way into it. Huh. So when do I feel connected? When do I feel loving? When do I feel whole in this crazy world that we all share? How can I open to that feeling of this euphoria, this satchitananda, this bliss? You know, even in the most painful times, could I tap into that? That's grace. So he concludes this. This is at the end of the book. He says, when we recognize that nothing has to go right for us to be so that we might be happy, that people do not have to behave in order for us to love them, then our walk home can become surprisingly simple. We have enormous power not to manipulate our world, but to be happy and to know peace right in the midst of where it is. He says, the secret of finding God, don't you love it? It's a secret. The secret of finding God is understanding that there's no great spiritual attainment that must come first. You don't have to go through my ministerial classes. You don't have to read all the books and supplicate. You don't have to become a yogini. It's right there, right now. You don't have to earn it. And he says, anyone who wants to feel God's presence will feel God's presence. You just open to it. Huh, God's presence. So I'm going to close with a prayer for presence, and then we'll take you into the prayer. You know, this is John O'Donohue. He speaks to my soul. He's from Ireland. And he says, all there is this divine presence. It's everywhere in the universe. But you got to call it in. You got to call it in. You got to remember the prayer. You got to remember the presence, because the presence is what you are. So this is John O'Donohue giving you the presence. It's a blessing for presence. It's the doorway of presence. It's right there, right now for you. So I'm open your hearts for presence. This is what he says. Awaken to the mystery of being here. And I enter this quiet immensity of my own presence. I have joy and peace in the temple of my senses. I see beauty everywhere. I receive encouragement when new frontiers beckon me. I respond to the gift, the call of my gift, and the courage to follow its path. I let the flames of truth free me of all sense of falsity. May warmth of heart keep this presence aflame within me. May anxiety never linger about me. And may my outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of my soul. Today I take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. Today I am consoled in the secret symmetry of my soul. And so may our experience in each moment be a sacred gift woven into the hearth of wonder, into the heart of wonder, as we arrive home and know it as if for the first time, and we rest at that table between presence and meaning. And so I invite you to go to that table where presence and meaning meet, the presence of the one that we all share, and the meaning that's discovered within the soul, an eternal soul, a jubilant and beholden soul that knows that this whole life has been one big dance of grace, that which holds us, supports us, loves us, assists us through grace in assuming the consciousness that we need in order to face whatever life presents to us. And so I created some acronyms for grace as I was pondering that word, and it was kind of fun. I invite you to do the same. And acronyms for grace: God revealed as consciousness expands. God revealed as consciousness expands. Another acronym that arose: good, recognized, awakening creative expression. Good, recognized, awakening creative expression. And the last little anagram I have is for grace: gifts received, allowing Christ's embrace. Gifts received, allowing Christ's grace. The Christ is what we all are, the awakened, loving presence. And the gifts are the gifts of that Christ consciousness that is awakening within our hearts. And so we embrace them, or better yet, as Dr. Ernest Holmes would say, we embody them, because we have as much of this grace as we can embody. So this Sunday, I invite you to smile. It's the smile of grace. It's the smile of yes. And when we say yes, 1,000 times yes to everything that life is bringing us, then grace in all her wisdom can unfold within us to show us and teach us the way. So grace, if you're out there, and I know, oh, you're really in here, we invite you to live this life and do with it as you will. We belong to you. You've always been there assisting us every step of the way, from the time we were taught until the time of our current knowing. We say yes. Assist us in assuming the consciousness that we require in order to be all that we are. If we have the bravery to see it, as that young poet has said at the inauguration, and the bravery to be it, then grace can have its way with us. 1, 2, 3, 4, then we'll do something. 2, 3, 5, 6. Then you do something. This is the tango of life that asks that we step out and dance. And when we do, we know how to do it, even though we don't know how to do it. So in that heartfelt place, I invite you to put your hands over your heart and say the heart salutation with me that says, I honor you. We're saying this to Grace today. I respect you.
I love you.
You are the dynamic aspect of my soul. The grace in me bows to the grace in you. In this spaciousness, we are one. Open your eyes, open your heart, open your hands. Let the octopus teacher in you wiggle your fingers. Thank you for showing up with your beautiful masks on. And we'll see you next week. Oh, next month. We'll see you next month. What?
for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new